The Chaldean. Second volume. The Gospel of the Chaldee. Previously called the Book of the Illuminators, having the authority of the Nazarenes. Chapter 23. When Jesus spent the days in Jerusalem, the nights were spent on the slopes of Mount Olive. And the disciples built shelters close to a place where there was an oil press. However, one day at eventide, Jesus went to the house of Simon the Pure, where some women who were followers of his were living. Though the disciples were given food, little was said to them, for, they being strangers, the people in the house were suspicious, and Simon lay on a cushion across from Jesus. After they had eaten and were talking together, a woman came from a house nearby. She was veiled and carried an alabaster jar. Now, this was Mary of Magdala, whose father had been a merchant, but he disowned her, for she had lived with a centurion serving in the army of Rome. When he returned to his lawful wife, Mary had kept herself by singing in the taverns of Galilee. The woman unsealed the jar and poured a sweet-scented oil over the head of Jesus, seeing which some of those present were indignant, saying, "What a waste, when this could have been sold for a lot of money which would have benefited the poor." Jesus said, "Leave her alone. There is little point in being angry with her when all she has done is to honor me. You can help the poor whenever you like, but I will not be here much longer." Turning to Mary of Magdala, he said, "Why do you pay me this honor? For the cost to you must have been great." Someone said, "The price was easily obtained." Mary said to Jesus, "Sire, I am she whom you saw in Peneus, for when women reviled me, I came to you and said, 'Forgive my sins.' When you asked wherein I had sinned, I said, 'By loving while unwed.' Thereupon you said, 'That of itself is no wrongdoing and demonstrates greater love than that of many who say, the price of my love is marriage.' You said I gave the greatest form of love any woman can give, for, being virgin, I went to my love without the security of marriage, seeking in no way to bind the man." Jesus said, "With this man you did no wrong, and though your love was unblessed in the eyes of men, providing you loved truly, it was pure and sanctified in the sight of God. The man, however, is not without sin in this manner and will surely be called to a proper accounting. And though since leaving him you have done wrong, he bears his portion of the guilt. You chose freely not to be a woman reserved for marriage, a choice you could rightly make. Only should you now seek marriage, saying, 'Though I love you too, now I have my price,' would you be doing wrong, this being committed against God, love, and your husband." Mary said, "Sire, I have been a sinner but have not sinned this last year, nor shall I again. Should I love once more, I will not now claim the rights of marriage which I once repudiated." Jesus said, "Love is a blending of spirits, and not a union of flesh. Woe to those whose love compounds discord in the place where love is fulfilled. If these things confound you, read the books of wisdom." During this time, those in positions of power were taking counsel as to how they might take Jesus by guile and deliver him to the Romans. For they feared a rising of the people during the great festival of the Jews. Now, Judas Iscariot, son of Simon, who had followed Joseph the Just before coming to Jesus and becoming one of the 12 envoys, sought for the chosen one who would deliver the Jews. This he now believed to be another, not Jesus, and he therefore sought to have Jesus held during the festival. Judas, unlike the other envoys, was a Judean, therefore he was unrestricted. Judas went to the council and said, "My master performs signs and fulfills prophecies which speak to the hearts of the people. Therefore, might they not proclaim him in the coming days?" The council said, "The people are ripe for revolt, and troublemakers are many. We will take this one also. Reveal him to us, and we will hold him. And for the service you will be paid in silver." One who sat in the council sent a warning to Jesus, saying, "Leave Bethania and go to Ephraim." But Jesus returned a reply which said, "Things are as they should be, and the prophecies will be fulfilled. On the first day of the festival, when lambs were being sacrificed, the disciples came to Jesus and asked where the Passover meal should be eaten. Jesus chose two of these and sent them away with this instruction, "Go down and cross the stream flowing eastward from the city, at a place where there is a covered well. There you will see a man seated with a water pitcher beside him. Say to this man, 'We thirst but need more than water.' He will then arise, saying nothing, and you must follow him at a distance. And when you see him enter a house, go in also, giving this message to the owner, 'We come from the master.' He will then show you a room where you must make preparations. Now, the house belonged to Obed, who was nigh 80 years of age, whose brother was Barnabas the elder. In an upper room, the disciples prepared the Passover meal. And when it was evening, Jesus came with the 12 envoys and 3 others, but only 13 ate with him. After he had taken his place at the table and all were seated, Jesus said, 'I have very much wanted to keep this Passover with you because it is the last before my ordeal. And I tell you, I will not share another with you until my purpose is fulfilled.' Then he took the cup before him and drank, saying, 'Blood is the life of men, while this is the life of the grape sacrificed for men, so it is a fitting and worthy symbol of he who offers his life for men. I will not taste wine again until the rule of God is established.' He then passed the cup to John, and, taking the bread, he gave thanks and broke it, saying, 'This represents my body, which will be broken as an example to the sons and daughters of men, for all must freely sacrifice for others. As you eat of the bread which is sacrifice, so shall you eat the bread of eternal life. For without sacrifice, there is no life. Henceforth, call it remembrance bread and remembrance wine. When meeting afterwards, do this and remember me. But remember also the sacrifices which must be made for the cause of God.' Jesus said, 'The sacrifice is ready. The hand of the betrayer rests upon this table and dips in the bowl. But this is as it should be. Take the cup and drink again, let it seal a new covenant signed with the blood of one who is dedicated to the cause of men and their salvation from darkness into life eternal.' Those about the table began to speculate among themselves as to who would do such a thing. But Jesus bid them be silent, saying, 'There is no evil lacking some seeds of goodness which, if extracted, can be nurtured into great trees. A man, finding his store bag of seed grain is moldy, does not throw it out, but searches to find the good grains, and from these he grows a crop which ripens to goodness.' They then began disputing among themselves as to who was first in precedence among them. And Jesus said, 'Those with worldly authority derive satisfaction from declaring themselves benefactors of the people, but the benefit they seek is that accruing to themselves. Let this not be so among you, the one seeking least for themselves and giving most being those taking precedence.' After a while, Jesus said, 'My friends, I shall be with you only a short time now.' Peter said, 'Sire, where do you go? Are you deserting us? Can we not come with you?' Jesus said, 'You cannot follow me immediately on this path, and to accompany me would serve no purpose. But later on you can follow me. Do not become faint-hearted, for if you believe in what I have taught you, believe also that I will be guided and strengthened. I shall prepare a place for you in the kingdom of God and wait there to welcome you. Where I will be, you shall be also, and where you are, there too I will be. You know the way to where I am going and can follow, for the law and the books of wisdom are the way, the truth, and the light. I have brought you a light to show the way, follow it and you will not go astray. Later you will understand that I am united with the Father. And as I am united with him, so you are united with me. Though we are many, let us stand as one. And those who serve I will serve. To he who believes in my teachings I will manifest. For what I do is done to prove to men my own convictions, that they will come to accept my teachings and follow the road of salvation. The people yearn for the fulfillment of the prophecies and will surely follow one who fulfills them.' Thomas said, 'Are you going to manifest only to us?' Jesus answered, 'If anyone care for me and my cause, I will speak to him through the power of the Holy Spirit, and it will come to him also. Those who do not care for me or my cause will ignore my teachings, but do not fear them. Be on guard against those who pay lip service only. While I am with you, I can speak as men speak, but when I am gone, the Holy Spirit will bear messages in my name, clarifying your mind so you recall all I have taught you. In the kingdom of the Spirit there are many splendid places, and I assure those who remain steadfast that they will be in the best of these. For when men die, each is drawn to the place whereof he is worthy, even to each one is prepared a place for his soul. I will go down in the flesh to arise again in the Spirit with power to manifest to men. I will demonstrate what man can do, and as I do, so can all men. I am a sacrifice to the misguided beliefs of men, that, in the fulfillment of those beliefs, they might turn to the path of their salvation. I am the vine, and he who is above me is the cultivator, you are the branches, and the sap in me flows out to you. The sap is my teachings, severed from which you will be like a branch cut from the vine, only suitable for burning. I am the vine, and you are its fruit, and if the vine is sound, surely its fruit will be sound also. This is my last instruction to you, love one another as I have loved you. For there is but one greater love than that of a man who would sacrifice his life for his friends, and that is sacrifice of a life for a cause where he serves those unknown to him. I have said, love one another, for you will be strengthened in the knowledge of that love. If the world hates you, it has hated me first. If you were to remain part of the world, it would accept you as its own and love you. But because I have severed you from the world, setting you apart, it will hate you. For it is in the nature of worldly men to hate those who are different. And not only are you different, you also seek to point out their wickedness. If I chose an easier path, your burden would be so much greater, and the fruit of the vine might fall on barren ground. As they have persecuted me, so they would have persecuted you. As they have spurned my teachings, so they would have spurned yours. And as they rejected me, so they would have rejected you. I have much more to say, but you cannot receive it now. Later, the Spirit of enlightenment will come when you are ready and guide you truthfully. It will speak to you with a voice of its own, but will convey to you what comes from above. Soon now you will see me no more in the flesh, but you will behold me in a new and glorious form. Those with Jesus did not understand the meaning of what he said, and discussed it among themselves, saying, "What does he mean by soon?" Others said, "What can he mean when he says, 'Soon you will no longer see me, but then you will behold me?'" The others said, "We just cannot tell." Jesus, knowing what they were saying and what was in their thoughts, said, "You are wondering about the things I have said. I can assure you that while you sorrow, the world will rejoice, for its hopes are fulfilled. A woman becomes afraid just before she gives birth, but once the ordeal is over, she no longer recalls the labor pains but rejoices in her child. So too you will grieve for a while, but I will manifest to you, and then you will rejoice in your hearts. The Father's will is that the things I teach should be given to the people, but they will not listen, arguing among themselves as to who I am. Therefore, I must drain the bitter cup of life to its last dregs. Then they will say, 'This is he,' and heed my words. This I do for men, and none can say I have not faced up to the tests of life or I have shirked its supreme trial." The disciples then drank the reeling cup, and Jesus said to Peter, "I depend upon you to carry the burden among the brethren." Peter said, "Sire, I am ready to go anywhere, to follow you to prison or even to death." Jesus said, "Before the cocks crow in the morning, even you, the most loyal of men, will desert me. Must I undergo the ordeal friendless?" Then all the others assured him of their loyalty. Jesus said, "When I sent you out with few possessions, did you ever go short of anything?" They said, "No." Jesus then said, "Things are different now. Those who have a purse of money had better take it with them and keep a pack prepared for flight. Whoever is without a sword, let him sell his cloak and buy one. For I can assure you I will fulfill all that the holy books say. And is it not written, 'He was classified as an outlaw'? Yes, truly all that is written will be fulfilled in me, and men will find salvation through this fulfillment. One of the disciples said, "Look, Sire. We have two swords among us." Jesus said, "That is sufficient." Peter said, "Sire, are you going to lead us against the kingdom of evil in arms?" Jesus said, "The battle is for the immortal souls of men. Feast your eyes on me, for the hour draws near when I shall no longer be with you in body." Then he said to Judas, "Go, spend whatever money is needful, but make haste." No man there understood the meaning of this saying. When Judas had gone, Jesus said, "Upon me has fallen the obligation for fulfilling the hopes of men. Now I give you a last command, stand by one another. For if you remain loyal to my cause and to each other, all will know you are true men of God. Do not worry over much, have faith in the goodness of God and in me. In the kingdom of heaven there are many places, and had it been otherwise, I would have told you. I go first and will prepare a compatible place for all who are with us. Do not fear because of the destruction of the body. Remember all I have told you. But be staunch and steadfast, for as they have persecuted me, so will they persecute you. Remember, I have overcome the fears of the flesh, this is my conquest. I will now reveal the secret of my glory, it is dedication to service. And that glory is the heritage of all men." When they had finished, Jesus went out with his followers and, passing over the stream of Kedron, went to a place called Gethsemane because of an oil press there. He took 11, as Marcus the Judean, who was a priest, did not go, Peter being jealous of him. This Marcus had been a follower of John of the wilderness and was a friend of Judas. When Jesus departed with the 11, Marcus did not return to his mother's house in Ophel, but stayed with Lazarus and the others. After Jesus had gone, men came to take him, and Marcus, snatching a cloak, dashed out to warn Jesus. Though knowing what should be done for the chosen one, Judas went to the captain of the temple guard and said, "I am one of those who follow Jesus the Galilean, but I fear what he intends to bring about. Therefore, let him be held as the council has decreed." When Jesus reached the chosen spot in Gethsemane, he turned and said to those with him, "Pray that you may be spared the test." He then took Peter, James, and John and withdrew with them about a stone's throw away. Jesus was depressed and filled with foreboding. And he said to the three, "I am going apart to pray for strength to do what must be done. You stay here and keep watch. Perhaps the cup of bitterness will pass me by, for with the Father all things are possible. But I fear there is no other way for me but to abide my destiny." Jesus went just a short distance and lifted his face to the stars and red glowing moon above. James heard him pray, "Father, everything is in your hand. Let it not be as I would have it, but according to your will, I leave it in your hand. But let not the ordeal be too much for me. The hour is at hand. Strengthen the Son whom you have glorified with the power of your Spirit, that he may bring to fruition the task you have set him, leading men to the path of eternal life. Is there no other way?" He then came back to the three, and the sweat stood out redly on his brow. And finding two asleep, for they were heavy with wine, he said to Peter, "Simon, could you not stay awake even at a time such as this? Be vigilant and watch, praying you may be spared a greater test. In days to come, men will lift up their eyes to heaven and say, 'Blessed was he who came in the name of God, bringing us the light of salvation. My soul is very sorrowful because of the things I must endure and accomplish, that the aspirations of men shall not be denied a response. Tarry, therefore, a while longer, keeping me company so I do not weaken. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. It is a dreadful thing I have to do." Then he went away again, but what he prayed no man knows. When he returned, all three were asleep, for the wine had befuddled them. Jesus said, "Still sleeping? Now it is enough, for the hour has come, and the servant of man is betrayed into the hands of his enemies. Let us wait no longer, for here they come." Jesus was now quite calm and strengthened. Now, the place where Jesus had gone was known to Judas, who arrived accompanied by the temple guards carrying torches, staves, and cudgels. Seeing them, Jesus stood up and said, "Whom do you seek?" Judas went up to him and said, "Sire, I am here." He kissed Jesus to let him know he came with friendly intentions, but it also identified him. For though those who came knew Jesus by sight, the law required that some other identify him. But he was not taken according to the law, but by the temple guards. Jesus said, "So the chosen one has been selected for sacrifice by a kiss." But Judas said, "No, sire, there will be no sacrifice." When the temple guard seized hold of Jesus, one with him drew a sword and wounded one of them. Another said, "Shall we smite with our swords?" But Jesus forbade this, saying to the captain of the guard, "Were my kingdom of this world, I would order my followers to take up arms. But my kingdom is not of this world, and evil cannot be vanquished by evil." He rebuked them with the words, "Did you expect to find a dangerous criminal who had to be overcome with weapons? I have been among you many days, and you left me alone. Still, what has to be done will be done, so do as you must." The captain of the guard said, "If this were left until tomorrow, many would die." Chapter 24. Jesus was brought privately before Annas, son of Seth, who, after questioning Jesus, sent him to the Supreme Council of Jewry, which was assembled. He also sent a message saying, "This man is deluded but nonetheless dangerous, and these are troubled times." When Jesus was taken away, Simon Peter followed at a distance. And after Jesus was brought from the residence of Annas, he followed and came to the forecourt of the temple, but could not go beyond because of the disturbance. Servants lit a brazier of charcoal and stood warming themselves, for the night was cold, and Peter stood with them. While he stood there, a relative of the high priest, named Joses but called John, a follower of Jesus in secret, came and spoke to the woman at the door and went into the chamber hall. He also spoke to Peter. Then a maidservant came and spoke with the woman at the door, who came over to Peter and said, "You are one of the Galilean's followers." But Peter said, "I am no friend of his." "You must be mistaken." However, the woman persisted, saying, "Your speech betrays you." Then she cried out to those about the brazier, "Beware, here is one of the Galilean sorcerer's followers." Then the men clustered about Peter and said, "Certainly you are a Galilean." And some said, "We have seen him with this rebel." Then they said to Peter, "Did you not cause trouble in the temple? We have seen you there." Then the men said, "The woman is right, you are a Galilean. Your speech witnesses against you." Others said, "He is just a Galilean," and laughed. Peter then became angry and shouted, "Why do you pester me? I do not know the man. I have heard about him but not seen him." Then the other disciple came out and told the men to leave Peter alone. He took him by the arm and went out through the gateway. As they went, a cock crew, for the fowls were in the city. And Peter wept bitterly, for he had failed the test. The other had compassion on Peter because of the weakness of the flesh. And Peter said, "I will make amends." Then the disciple took Peter to a safe place nearby. The Supreme Council had assembled that night in the chamber of hewn stone within the great temple. Though the Roman law did not permit men to sit in judgment during the night hours, the Supreme Council was afraid because of the mood of the people. When Jesus stood before the council, he was asked, "Are you the chosen one, God's anointed who will deliver us?" Jesus replied, "I could deliver the people if you would let me do so." The high priest, son-in-law of Annas, sat with the council. And he said to Jesus, "Are you a Galilean?" When Jesus replied that he was, the high priest said, "Surely you, being a learned man, know that no prophet will come from that place." Jesus made no reply. Then a man named Nicodemus said to Jesus, "The law does not condemn any man without trying to understand his motives. Tell us why you do these things." Jesus answered, "Is it not written that if the people are to be saved, there must be a suffering deliverer who will also be the anointed of God?" Naki Madan then said to the council, "If this man is what he claims, he is harmless. For he brings suffering to none except himself." Then another counselor said, "I myself have heard him say he comes, not to suffer, but to bring a sword to free the people." Jesus stood calm and serene. One of the elders said to him, "Is it true you were born of fornication, and, when born, your father Joseph and Mary, the woman who gave birth to you, had to flee from the anger of the people?" But 12 of those present witnessed for him that he was not the child of fornication, but of a rightly married mother. Though many of the elders tried to make out a case against Jesus, they failed. For though there were witnesses who gave false evidence against him, others spoke in favor of Jesus. Then a law scribe came forward and testified with the others he had heard Jesus declare that the temple was only a man-made structure which he would destroy in 3 days. However, there was no agreement among the witnesses as to what had been said or what it meant. Some held Jesus to be a sorcerer who spoke of magic, while others held him to be a madman whose talk was not rational. Many remained silent and thoughtful. One of the leading men among the elders stood up and said to Jesus, "Can you not speak for yourself and answer the accusations?" Jesus said, "Are the charges not being fully argued out?" The high priest said, "I ask you, in the name of the Most High God, tell us, for we do not wish to make any mistake, are you the chosen one who will deliver us?" Jesus answered, "You ask this because others, witnessing what I do, say this is so. If I say I am the deliverer, I do not lie. I am a true son of God, standing at his right hand, ready to obey his will, and I speak with divine authority. I am one destined to bring down the whole structure, replacing it with a new rule." Upon hearing this, the high priest said, "We need no more witnesses, for we have all heard him blaspheme. The evidence for treason has been given by his own mouth. He is convicted through words from his own lips. What more is required before your verdict?" But there was no little dispute among the elders, for some said, "It is no crime to say, 'I am the chosen one who will deliver.'" Others said, "It is no crime for a man to be misguided and deluded, for will not the deliverer be disclosed by deeds which this man has not performed?" It was also said, "Is he not fulfilling the prophecies? Therefore, be wary in judgment." One of the elders said, "Let us set the good this man does against the other. And is it not well known that he has a power of healing not in other men? What wrong has he done? He has not called men to arms against Caesar." The high priest then stood up and said, "If we allow this man to go free at this time, he will stir up trouble, the people being ripe for revolt. Then Caesar will send his legions against us, and the nation will be destroyed, for the hand of Caesar is heavy. We cannot set the life of one man against the lives of many. And those who would set him free are no friends of Rome, neither can they be friends of our people." Then some said, "His crime is against Rome, and not against us." But others said, "What? Shall we deliver him to Roman cruelty?" The high priest said, "This can be no concern of ours. We are shepherds of the people. Let those who speak against Caesar stand before Caesar's judgment seat. Let our judgment be that we found him guilty against Caesar, and then leave him to Roman mercy. We have no power to condemn him." Therefore, it then being daylight, they bound Jesus and delivered him to Pilate with the verdict, "He is guilty against Rome." It was now, for many, Passover Eve, not all keeping it at the same time, for this was in dispute. Therefore, many who could have spoken for Jesus, being righteous men, went to make their preparations for the festival. Some thought he would be set free when it was over, but most knew in their hearts he would not be released. When Jesus was brought before Pontius Pilate, governor of Judah, who sat upon the judgment seat, the law's cribs testified to the charges, saying, "This man stirs up the people to revolt against Caesar by taking the title Son of God, thus claiming to be king of the Jews. He says he brings swords and will purge the land with fire. He blasphemes against Caesar and seeks to bring a new rule of law into the land. He rides into the city proclaiming himself the deliverer fulfilling the prophecies." From whom can we be delivered? Pilate said to Jesus, There are many serious charges against you. Have you any defense against them? When Jesus remained silent, Pilate said, Tell me, if Son of God is a kingly title, are you the King of the Jews? Jesus said, Do you ask this for yourself, or are you being influenced by the things said about me? Pilate answered, Am I a Jew, to know these things? Your people have handed you over, for, according to their interpretation, you have made kingly claims. What have you done? Jesus said, Is an earthly king most worthy to be called the Son of God? Surely it is goodness and not kingship that counts. I am a son of God, and this title I rightly claim, but if I have a kingdom, it is not of earth. Had it been otherwise, my followers would not have permitted me to be taken. Pilate said, You are, then, a king of some kind. Jesus replied, As you say, I am a king, but I do not come to rule, for I was born into the world to testify of the truth. And all who honor truth listen to my words. Pilate said, Who knows what is truth or what it means? One man's truth is another man's deception. Jesus answered, No man can know truth, for it is not of earth, which is a place of deception. But God knows truth, and it is with him alone. Pilate said, Does not Caesar know truth? To which Jesus replied, No man knows truth. Pilate said, Is the truth with you or with Caesar? Jesus said, Caesar's heart is in fornication, not in truth. And this you know to be true. Would you condemn me for speaking truth? Pilate said, Say no more. Jesus said, See how those who uphold truth are judged by those holding authority. Then a man who was guardian at the temple testified, This man stirs up trouble in the land so the people are ripe for revolt. And his doctrine is not contained in Galilee, but is spreading all over Judah. Hearing this, Pilate asked whether the man before him was Galilean, and, being told he was, Pilate said, This man should be tried before Herod. Therefore, Jesus was sent to Herod, who, being in Jerusalem at the time, was residing nearby, for he was under the protection of the governor. Herod was pleased for the opportunity to see Jesus and questioned him at length, hoping to see some miracle performed, but he was disappointed in all things. Though many testified against him before Herod, Jesus remained silent on such matters, for it was his duty and destiny to fulfill the prophecies in the holy books. Herod found Jesus guilty of blasphemy and treason, and returned him to Pilate, saying, He has committed treason in Judah. Let him be tried for that. It has not been fully proven before me, but this I know surely, if he is released, there will be a revolt. For the people are inflamed, and your army is not large. When Pilate had taken his place on the judgment seat and Jesus was before him, he said, I am told you are a just man. Can goodness father crime? Jesus answered, Hypocritical goodness fathers many crimes. The people live in a night of ignorance, I come to lighten the darkness. Pilate said, If the light is put out, does that help the people? Is it not better for the light to shine? Even a faint glow is better than none. Jesus said, Do with me as you will. I will light a flame which will consume the world, and darkness will be no more. Pilate said, These things I do not understand, for your people have devious minds and make great issues over things of little importance. What else have you to say? Jesus replied, I came to men to manifest the love God has for them. As one of their brothers, I have undergone the trials and tribulations of men, overcoming the claims of the flesh so the spirit within shines forth with strength. I have pointed the way whereby men may rise to greatness, for such is their destiny. Pilate then said to the elders and some Levites who witnessed against Jesus, I am not a Jew, nor am I bound by the laws of the Jews. If this man has blasphemed against your God, then let him be tried by your law, but do not mention it to me, for I only listen to the law of Rome. They said, Do you say that a man who blasphemes against the divine Caesar is not worthy of death? Pilate said, Such a man should die. They said, This he has done. Also, in proclaiming himself king, he speaks against Caesar and Rome. Had he not done wrong to Caesar, we would surely not have delivered him to you. Pilate said, You are a troublesome people and tire me with these things. What would you have me do with your king? They answered, These are his words. We have no king except Caesar. Someone said, And acknowledge no other god. Then one of the elders stood up and said, Many have testified concerning his offenses. We know what should be done, but the power is with you. It is not lawful for us to put this man to death, therefore deal with him as seems best in your eyes. Pilate said, Why have you been spared the wrath of your God? Then Pilate said to those in the chamber of judgment, Who else wishes to testify against this man? One of the elders, a law scribe of the council, said, This man has claimed before the people that he is heir to the throne of David, but he is an impostor. He blasphemes the Holy One of our people by saying he is his son. If these things inflame the people so they revolt, then Rome pays the price. He comes forth from among the poor and disinherited, arousing the people so they seek to overthrow the stability of established authority. If his intentions are put into effect, we are all lost. He proclaims himself king and declares he will pull down the temple. He blasphemes against Caesar and says he will supersede Caesar's rule. He slanders Caesar and calls him a fornicator and liar. Under our laws, which you must also uphold, he deserves to die, and, if you are not against Caesar, also under the laws of Rome. Pilate said to Jesus, The balance weighs against you. Have you anything to say? When Jesus did not reply, Pilate asked him where he really came from. But Jesus remained silent. Pilate then said, Have you nothing to say to me, who have the power to condemn or release you? What shall I do with one such as you? Jesus then said, The power of Rome rests in your hands, but it gives you power over nothing except my body. Do with that as you will. It is not you, but those distorting the face of truth, who are to blame. Pilate said, If I deal with you one way, the people will say the authority of Rome supports your teachings and is not against the things you declare. They will say your claim to kingship is upheld and may even say you are preferred to Caesar. If I do this, I will certainly be called to account, for am I not the hand of Caesar whom you blaspheme and decry? Jesus said, I call men to a kingdom which is not yet of earth. Pilate said to Jesus, No one is compelled to speak on his own behalf. Then to the others there he said, Clearly this man is not guiltless concerning Caesar, but will any here speak for him? Then one of the Perusim stood up and said, Many could speak for this just man but have decided their duty lies elsewhere. We are an unbending people, sometimes over-concerned with righteousness, but mercy and justice are not least among the things we uphold. What wrong has this man done to Caesar? He has uttered words, which are no more than a breeze from the lips. And surely one so great as Caesar can withstand even the greatest tempest. If Caesar be man, then words would hurt him, but we are a people knowing nothing man can do will harm the highest divinities. Therefore, we could be less cautious than others. The greater they are, the more they tend to overlook the many weaknesses and failings of men. You, who know the greatness or smallness of he for whom you are the mouthpiece, can incline towards one less knowledgeable in such matters. If you are a worthy representative of Caesar, you will uphold his greatness and reveal his indulgence to us. As to whether this man be the chosen one or the deliverer, such questions can only be meaningless to Rome, for even we in jury are not in accord as to who they are or what they will do. Pilate said, You are a perverse race, over-concerned with unworldly things and ensnaring yourselves in your own net of goodness. You cannot even agree on the dates of your own festivals or the nature of your gods. Instead of heroes you have saints, yet your saintliness makes you unsaintly. You all agree to seek the truth but dispute which path to follow and so get nowhere. You agree to follow your God, but some say, we go this way, and others say, we go another. What you say today about this man you said yesterday about another. Your laws are a maze which I will not attempt to negotiate. Your thoughts are devious, and your heart's an unreadable scroll. I am unfortunate in my governorship. Now, a man named Barabbas had also been brought forth to be judged. And Pilate continued, I know not one man from the other, who is godly and who is ungodly I cannot tell. You yourselves do not know which of these two men has said and done these things, or which is your king. All I know is that there must be a strife. The rights of Caesar must be upheld, and justice must be done. The rest I leave in your hands. No two men can suffer for the same crime unless they be in association, but if no association is proven, only one may suffer. Therefore, decide among yourselves which man is to die. Both claim to be the sons of God, both are deliverers, both have blasphemed against Caesar and your God, and both have struck against Caesar. One has killed, the other has not. Clemency is mine to give at this time, but clemency overruling justice is weakness. If both these men be killed, then surely the whole of the people will rise in revolt. Already the streets are thronged, and much wine is being drunk. But if one is released, those rejoicing will restrain those who sorrow. It will also divide the people who otherwise might act in accord. If one is truly the Son of God, then the Father will not desert his Son, so it would not be wrong to condemn him, for thus too will be saved. Responsibility for restraining bloodshed now lies with you. And already the people outside are in riotous mood. Therefore, choose between the two men. Both have the same name, but one is called Barabbas, and the other Bar-Herods. Choose which shall be condemned for these crimes and which shall be released. Then announce it to the people. Pilate said, I will condemn the one claiming to be king of the Jews, for this is a crime against the peace of Caesar. You tell me which he is. So all the elders of Jewry went out and consulted among themselves and sent heralds among the people. Jesus remained calm and unshaken, though he had been 3 hours in the judgment chamber. When consulting among themselves, one of the elders said, One dies and one is saved. Let us be sure we save the one who will deliver us. A Perushim said, It is not for us to choose which of these is the chosen one of God, for both are equally deluded. Neither should we choose according to their goodness or their teachings, or even by what they have done. This is a time of turmoil. Therefore, what is the life of one man against the lives of thousands? For surely this number will die if there is a revolt. Which will appease the people by his release, and which will cause less strife if he dies? May the Most High God help us to choose wisely, and may he show compassion on the one who must die. Whichever dies is the savior of many, and so who are we to condemn him otherwise? Let the other be the bearer of our sins, and we will cast him out from among us. Then some Levites went and addressed the people thronging about, and they shouted, Crucify the king, save the deliverer. But all were not in accord, and there were many disputes. Then the elders went back to Pilate and said, Release Barabbas. Now, when Judas saw what had happened, he was exceedingly troubled. For he had hoped neither Jesus nor the other would suffer more than confinement over the festival period. He was therefore filled with remorse. He sought to return the silver to the temple treasurers, throwing it before them, saying, I have betrayed the innocent. They said, It means nothing to us. Be it on your head, not ours. When they told the high priest about the matter, he said, This money is tainted and cannot be put into the temple coffers. So they used the money to buy a plot in the clay field used by potters, and it was used for the burial of strangers having no kindred. Then, after putting his house in order, Judas hanged himself from a ledge. Pilate ordered that Jesus be scourged after the custom of Rome and delivered him to the army for crucifixion. And it was then about the sixth hour. The soldiers took him to a small court where, by custom, men gathered who took pleasure in tormenting the condemned. They danced before him, spitting and mocking. A victor's crown was plaited from thorn bush, and he was beaten with burning weeds. Placing a soldier's scarlet mantle about his shoulders, they bowed before him in mock homage, saying, Hail, You great King of the Jews. Others covered his eyes and struck him, saying, Now, sorcerer, tell us who hit you then. He was pricked with reeds, and the mockers made sport with him in many ways. When the cruelty was over, the soldiers stripped off the scarlet mantle and replaced his tunic, taking him away to the place of execution. Because of the scourging and other sufferings, Jesus was unable to bear the cross piece he carried. And a man named Simon the Cyrene, a stranger from Africa just come by way of Joppa, was forced by the soldiers to carry it. A crowd followed, among which were many lamenting and wailing women. Jesus turned to them and said, Daughters of Jerusalem, do not be sorrowful because of me, for I approach the door of a greater life. Weep instead for yourselves and your children, for the day comes when you will have much greater cause for sorrow. If these things are done while the tree is green and full of life, what would they not do if it were old and dry? Coming to the place of execution, which was where the skull of Adam lay buried, the soldiers fastened Jesus to the crosspiece and raised it up into its slot. Then his feet were fastened to the rest. After this, they divided his clothes among them, but the mantle, being woven without a seam, was given to one selected by lot. About his neck was hung a plaque, written in Latin, which read, Jesus Bar Herodes, King of the Jews. The Jews protested to Pilate about this, but he said, This is written by my authority. Two others were crucified with Jesus, one on his right and one on his left. People passing along the road mocked and abused him, shouting, Come down and rule over your kingdom. Some said, Where is your all-powerful Father now, and, if you are what you claim to be, get yourself out of this. Many laughed, saying, He came to save us, but cannot save himself. Savior, save yourself first. The witnesses who stood about the cross also mocked him. They said, O deliverer, now deliver yourself. At the ninth hour, the sky darkened with cloud, and there was thunder and lightning. Thus the prophecy was fulfilled which said, In the valley of decision, on the day of the deliverer, the sun and the earth will be darkened. Then Jesus began to speak the words of David and later said, My God, do not let your power drain away from me. Some standing nearby said, Listen, he is calling on Elijah. Another said, Let us see if Elijah will come and take him. A man came with a sponge soaked in vinegar and dew wet and raised it to the lips of Jesus, but he turned his head away. Then some said, He is ready to give up the spirit. Jesus opened his eyes and said to those who stood near, It is nearly over. Manilaus, the centurion who stood facing Jesus, said, Truly this is a man. Then someone shouted, It is over, and there was an outbreak of wailing from the women. Chapter 25. A number of women stood off watching from a distance, among them being Mary of Magdala, also called Mary of Bethena, Marmarium, and Mary the mother of James the Younger and Joseph, and Salome, who had followed Jesus, administering to his needs in Galilee. There were also others who had come to Jerusalem with him, but the only disciple there was James. When the women wept with pity, he said to them, I see now what I was blind to before. Let us not waste tears in futile pity, but strengthen our hearts so his sacrifice is not in vain. He did this to change the hearts of the people. Let us be worthy of him. Then James left, for he received word that the disciples were being sought, it being feared they would set fire to the great temple, or arouse the people so there was a revolt. There had been disturbances in the city, but because of Barabbas, only three were killed. Mary, the mother of Jesus, was taken to the house of John, and Marcus and Joses also came there. It was in that house that the first words of this gospel were written. Many of the disciples had deserted Jesus and were in hiding. Others went about not knowing what to do, their hearts full of misery and sorrow. They lacked the influence needed to save Jesus from the common pit of criminals. And Mary, his mother, did not claim the body, though the arrangements made were unknown to her. Now, one of the elders of the Supreme Council was a man named Josias, called Joseph of Arimathea, son of Joachim, son of Nathan, son of Eleazar, son of Elihu, son of Joachim, son of Zadok, who lived on the Merchant's Road, a day's journey from Jerusalem. He also owned an estate northwest of the city. He had a brother-in-law named Nicodeus, and both were secret followers of Jesus. Joseph of Arimathea, the wise commander, had been present at the council when it sat in judgment on Jesus, and he supported him, but many more who could have done so were absent because of the hour. When evening drew near and Jesus had been 4 hours on the cross, Joseph of Arimathea, being a man of status and authority, went to Pontius Pilate without fear, for they were friends. He requested the body of Jesus, his kinsman, saying, "It is written in our law that the Son shall not be permitted to set on the body of a murdered man." The governor said, "You are an upright man, and I will not deny this to you." But he was surprised to hear Jesus had died so quickly, and he sent for the centurion in charge of the execution, a man known to Joseph, who assured Pilate that Jesus was undoubtedly dead. On hearing this, Pilate granted the commander custody of the body, and though some Jews present objected, wishing Jesus to be buried in the criminal's pit, they had to submit to Roman law. Yet the Jewish law also stated it was the duty of the nearest relative to dispose of the body, irrespective of how death occurred. Now this being the Sabbath eve, the bodies could not remain upon their crosses after nightfall. Therefore, the Jews requested of Pilate that the legs of the condemned men be broken, allowing the bodies to hang free, so they quickly died. So the soldiers took mallets and broke the legs of the other two, but when they came to Jesus, the centurion said, "He is already dead." Joseph the commander took his son Joses, Nicodeus, and one other and, having already purchased a linen shroud, went to the place of execution and removed Jesus from the cross. Wrapping him in the sheet, they carried Jesus through the darkness to a tomb already cut out of the rock. It was a two-chambered cavern northwest of the city, having a ledge running around the inside, and the entrance faced eastward towards the place of execution. It was the north end of a garden planted with cabbages, and the gardener was also custodian of the tomb. When Jesus had been placed inside, a great stone was rolled across the entrance, and two men were left on guard beside it. Now, things happened on the Sabbath which may not be written, for they are in the secret of the Lord, known only to the elect of the house of God, which is in the Isle of Departure. Those who guarded the tomb, when questioned regarding these things, said, "The disciples came early and carried him away for burial in a proper manner at another place. For he was laid here only because of the Sabbath, and it was not his tomb." None questioned them further, for this was proper. And the guards were only placed to protect certain bodies from those who would work evil sorceries on them, those who improperly tampered with bodies being put to death. After the Sabbath was over, some women came with spices and oils to deal with the body of Jesus. But when they came to the tomb, they found that the great stone had been rolled aside. The guards were gone, but a young man was seated just inside the entrance, and he said to them, "Do not be afraid of me, for I am a friend. Jesus, whom you seek, is not here. But go and tell Peter that he will be with him as promised." The women were very much afraid and left in haste. When they had gone, Marmarium came with another and stood outside the tomb weeping. And as she did so, a voice behind her said, "Why do you weep?" Turning, she saw the gardener and said to him, "They have taken Jesus away, and I have no knowledge of what has happened to him." Then the gardener told her to go to John, the son of Annas. Peter and two others were also making their way to the tomb when they met the women coming away. The women told them what they had seen and heard. And Peter, thinking they were talking wildly through sorrow, sent one of his companions to go with them. Then he hastened to the tomb, arriving to find it empty and no one there. So, being perplexed, he sat down outside while the other went in search of the gardener. While seated there, he saw a shining figure in the gloom within the tomb and knew it for a spirit messenger. And he heard a voice saying, "Jesus has fulfilled the promises and is truly the chosen one, God's anointed." Then the other returned with the gardener, who told Peter to go and meet John, the son of Annas, at Emmaus, about 9 miles distant. And they went to that place, which was a village not far from the house of Joseph of Arimathea. Arriving there, they found John, the son of Annas, and another John, and James, and Joses, the sons of Joseph by Anna, his first wife, the fair stranger, his son by Mary, and Mark, his adopted son. Nicodemus was also there with Lazarus, and they were all in the house of Joses. Later, a number of envoys came. Then, while they were seated at a table, Jesus came among them and said, "Let us take food together and rejoice, for the prophecies have been fulfilled regarding the chosen one as it is said in the holy books. The servant of man is arisen from among those who sleep, for death has not claimed him. But these things, while fulfilling the promises, will not bring about the rule of God, for this will not come while men sit waiting for signs. The people have been given that which fulfills their hopes and aspirations. Now surely they will believe in my cause and arise to sweep evil aside. Now the Spirit of truth dwells among you, though it is still out of place in a world under the rule of man." Then Jesus told of all the things which had been written in the holy books concerning these things, and how the chosen one, God's anointed, would be disowned by men, would suffer for their willfulness and arise from among the dead to appear on the third day. Then he said, "Are not all these things fulfilled in me?" Then he departed. Some days later, all the disciples who were the chosen of Jesus met in a secret place. And Jesus joined them and proved himself to those who still disbelieved. And they said, "Sire, forgive our disbelief and forgive us for doubting the things you taught concerning yourself." Jesus said, "This is the day of the coming of the Lord, who will rule the earth. Yet is it not written, 'This will be a day of darkness, and not of light'?" Then Jesus spoke these words, "I go to a place far away beyond the world, where you may not follow. For I fulfill the hopes of all men. Now, you go out, carrying the message that the prophecies have been fulfilled and the time is at hand when the rule of God should be established among men. For, the promises having been fulfilled for the people, surely they will now believe and rally to the cause of good, sweeping wickedness and evil from the face of the earth. Say to them, 'That has been done that had to be done. Now you must take up the burden, for if you would become children of God and reclaim your lost heritage, you must prove yourselves worthy heirs. Let not all the suffering be in vain." Then he told them secret things concerning the rule of God, and how men should be freed from trouble, distress, and pain. He explained how each man could be freed of all sickness and see beyond the range of the eye. These and many other things were explained, and also many things concerning the dominion of the Spirit. He said, "Follow my teachings, and the power of the Holy Spirit will come to you, enabling you to do many great things, causing wonder among others. Yet all these are the rightful possessions of men, if they will but establish their worthiness. Think not that God will descend from heaven to do the work of men. The world is yours, but life is with God. In the end, there is the accounting. Man must be responsible for his own destiny, so seek no divine intervention while men remain apathetic. God comes to the aid only of those who strive, who surmount the difficulties and obstacles of life." Having said these things, Jesus revealed himself to them in his form of glory, so they might know truth had been established in him. Then they were all bedazzled and astonished at what man could become and the extent of his powers awaiting development. Then they knew Jesus was all he claimed to be and hailed him as Christ, the anointed by God. For in him the Spirit of Christ was manifested as in no other. After this, Jesus left. Now, rumors of strange events came to the ears of certain Jews who were Herodians and Sadducees. Then they were exceedingly angry with those in power who had inclined towards Joseph, the wise commander. He said to those who raised their voices against him, "Why do you seek to stir up trouble? Those in high places, holding positions of power, did only what they thought best and complied with the law. What else could they do? I received the body of my kinsman because this was my duty, and I dealt with it decently, letting it rest in my private tomb over the Sabbath." Despite his authority, there was evidence against Joseph, and he was imprisoned, being kept under constant guard. One Sabbath, during the night hours, the Spirit of Jesus was projected to Joseph so he was comforted. But the guards, seeing it, fainted with fear. Then Joseph was brought before Pontius Pilate, but the governor found no fault in him, and he was released. Later, Annas and his son-in-law, who were then the high priests of Jewry, came to the house of Joseph, bringing with them the holy books written on scrolls within their box. They requested that he swear upon it in the sacred name of Allah, but he made oath only that he had done no wrong or broken no law. The wise commander remained in his house for many days, after which he went about unmolested. Then, when Pontius Pilate returned to Rome, Joseph departed from his home shores, coming to Setnadoan, from whence he moved to a well at the foot of a hill. He brought with him a clay cup which had been set in silver by a silversmith, and this was that cup used by Jesus. Some say Joseph married Holy Mary after the death of his wife, but this is a known heresy put about by those in ignorance of what is written, for his wife was not that Mary.